Let's put it up for Vince this morning. He's got something good he's bringing you this morning. Come on, with real vigor this morning. Hey, just love that guy. Love that guy. Yeah. Preach it.
I'm just going to take a moment here and think about all the payback I'm going to do to Jeff at some point. It's going to be good. You know, it's interesting as I start my message. What I wanted to talk about was what Jody and Jeff just talked about. So, there's this thing called Christianity that we're a part of. This is the Christian tradition. And it doesn't matter where you come at it from, whether this is something you've never done before, whether, you know, even when I say Christianity, you're tweaking. There's something in this that has power in this world. Personally, I believe it has a power to make this world so much better. I was driving with a guy in the Ghost yesterday, actually. We went ice climbing together. Never met him before. We're driving out. We have an hour and a half of driving. So, you know, like, so who are you? What do you do for a living? That kind of stuff. He asked me, I'm a pastor. Oh, what does that mean? So I started to describe what I mean by what we're doing here. And he couldn't use Christian words because that didn't make sense to him. So I started saying, it's about looking at every moment as something more. As being able to make it something more. You know, the moment where you look at your partner in the morning and say good morning, you can either have that just be good morning, or it can be something more. Where you're bringing into their lives and they're bringing into your lives. You can look at a moment in the grocery store where you walk up to somebody and they're, you know, trying to reach the top thing. That can either be a moment where you're going, wow, short sucks, doesn't it? Huh. You know, as you walk by. Or you can say, there's going to be something more here. Every moment, I think, in our world can be more in this beautiful, loving way. But it takes something to keep us focused there. And I think that's what we're doing here. Yeah, these moments change us. They make us feel different. That's beautiful. But it creates something more in this world. And I love that. I seriously don't think there's anything that has enough power to change our world like religion has. There's nothing that can make our world beautiful. In Christian context, we say heaven on earth, meaning just a really freaking good earth, where people love each other and care about each other and take care of each other and we're healthy. And the whole kind of fabric of the world is just working together to make this thing a little bit better. That's what heaven on earth means. And I think that's what Christianity can do. So when somebody, I won't say the word, but a-hole, in the name of Christianity, comes up and does just some stupid stuff, it literally drives me nuts. Anyone see the video going around of the pastor who's bragging about punching the kid for God? Like, he's like, he's an adult. I punched him as hard as I could, right in the chest. You take God seriously. And I'm like, oh, you son of a. And of course, you know, who are sending them to us? All of our atheist friends. See, Christianity is totally about violence and evil. Right there, I just showed it to you. Drives me nuts, because I'm looking at the power of what we have here. The potential to do things in our relationships and in the entire world. And I'm going, you guys are screwing this up. And if I could punch you in the head, I think I would. Okay, now that goes viral. I apologize. I shouldn't have said that. Someone else said, what was the line? If you just turn to God, all mental illness will be gone. Stop talking, please. Or say you're from another, I don't know, say I'm some crazy other person. Don't say you're a Christian and say stuff like that. It used to be that when you went to university, that's when you had to be scared. Because you'd have a professor that could take everything you believe about your religion and tear it apart in about 4 minutes. They'd studied your religion more than you had. They knew more of the problems with your religion than you do. And in a very short period of time, you were either faithless or furious. Nowadays, that's everywhere. Anyone read Christopher Hitchens? Fabulous writer, atheist. Here's what he says. to terrify children of the image of hell, to consider women an inferior creation, is that good for the world? Ooh. He says, well, I'll put it this way. You can say, or can certainly say, belief in God makes people behave worse. That can be proven beyond a doubt. Ooh. Another guy wrote this, with or without religion, you would have good people doing good things and evil people doing evil things. But for good people to do evil things, that takes religion. That's a groaning laugh. It's like, oh, jeez. Isn't that brutal? Here's this thing that in my heart I'm going, this is the thing that will change the world. This is the thing that has the potential to change everything. And then on the other hand, I read all these critiques, all these things. And my question for me and my question for you is, how do you respond? What do you do with it? 2 weeks ago we talked about, you have kind of two classic options. You can go to dogmatism, which is, this is the way it is, I don't care what you say. Yes, we punch people for God. God likes that. You can go to the other side, which we've a lot of us done, and you just run away. Christians, yeah, I don't know anything about that. Christians, I've never heard that word. What do you mean? Right? But after studying that story that I did 2 weeks ago, the daughters of Zelophehad, where instead of running to dogmatism or running away, they engaged. I said, what will it look like for us to engage these conversations? Because you know what? It's not just people. You look at the main text that we use, the Bible. There is some stuff in the Bible that turns my stomach. In fact, the story we're talking about today, I'm not even going to tell you the story because it's just, it's so brutal that if I tell you the story, you won't be able to think about anything else. So I'm going to tell you actually a softer story so we can get our heads around it. Because the other one is about genocide and killing and like it's just brutal. And it's in the Bible. Read a website from a guy. He says this. Can you throw that quote up for me, Chantel? This website is designed to spread the vicious truth about the Bible. For far too long, priests and preachers, that's me, have completely ignored the vicious criminal acts that the Bible promotes. Ouch. The so-called God of the Bible makes Osama bin Laden look like a Boy Scout. Maybe a little overstated, but I hear what he's getting at. This God, according to the Bible, is directly responsible for many mass murders, rapes, pillage, plunder, slavery, child abuse, and killing, not to mention the killing of unborn children. I've included references to the biblical passages, so grab your Bible and follow along. That last line's a bit brutal, isn't it? Because here's the truth. If you read the Bible, if you study the Bible, and depending on how you look at it, he's not wrong. There is stories about all those things in the text. And depending on what you want to do with it, personally, today, well, up until today, I wanted to skip this story because I was like, this is just too much. And many of us, we don't want to hear this stuff, right? Tell me the Jesus loves me Bible passages. Those are good. Don't do these ones. But today, that's where exactly where we're going to go. We're going to go to two stories. One, again, that's the genocide story. That's about as much as you're going to know about that story. It's brutal. But there's another story from the Bible. It's the one just before it. So we're right at the end of the book of Numbers. That's the Christian word. The Hebrew word is in the wilderness. We're right at the end of this book. And the story ends just like if it wasn't hard during the middle, the ending is just brutal. It just goes downhill. And the story we're talking about today is a guy named Moses. So as I'm telling the story, I want you to ask yourself, how do I deal with this? Am I going to go to just throw it out, this story? Am I going to go to dogmatism? This is how you take it. Or is there a way to engage in this story? That's what I want you to think through, okay? So keep your mind there. The story is about a guy named Moses, the most famous patriarch we have in the Bible. He's the guy who does most of it. You know, Ten Commandments? That's Moses. He's the guy. So the story is about Moses. He's standing in front of all of his people, and this is the stuff that he says. He says, if a man makes a vow, he's held to that vow. Anyone got a problem with that? Seems pretty straightforward, right? And then he says this. But if a woman makes a vow, and the man in her life doesn't agree with that vow, the vow isn't binding. The number of eyebrows that just went like this, whoop. Like, what? Isn't that brutal? Men, yeah, of course, we can make vows. Women, no. You only get to follow what we say you follow. Anyone have a significant problem with that? Significant problem. Can I get an amen on that one? When people say there's sexism in the Bible, it's there, and it's brutal. For a long time, I didn't know what to do with this. I went to the library, Ambrose. I sat for an afternoon with a pile of Christian commentaries this high and just reading them. They are boring, folks. But I was like, I got throw me a bone here. Like, I got to do something. Yeah. Reading Numbers is already painful enough. Reading a commentary about Numbers, that's just a whole new level of hell. But I was going, I need something. At first I was like, I'm going to skip it. I'm just going to, like, you guys don't know. You didn't read. Did anyone read Numbers before this message? Front to back? Ah, oh, crap. She totally did. Okay, outside of her, did anyone else read Numbers? Oh, Trevor, of course you did. No one else knew. If I could have skipped this last section, you wouldn't have known, would you? I could have just jumped to the next book, right? Hey, we're in Joshua. Yay! So I was like, throw me something here. I need some way to get at that text and get my brain around it, get a way to interact with it in a way that doesn't make me go, I need to throw this whole thing out. So now, before I get into this, I just want you to remind you something. The most main character in the Christian story is, if anyone went to Sunday school, there's one answer. Just yell it out for me. Amen. Main character in the Christian story, right? The thing is, Jesus isn't Christian as we understand it. He's Jewish. He grew up in a synagogue like this. If they were doing yarmulkes back in the day, he'd have a yarmulke. He's a good Christian, good Jewish boy from a good Jewish family, doing good Jewish things, following the Torah, which is the Jewish way of looking at the first part of the text. He took this part of the text, this section we're talking about, extremely seriously. He's Jewish. Sometimes I forget this. And so instead of reading the Christian commentaries that I did, I went, wait a second. How would Jesus have seen this? How would he have looked through it? And so I started reading Jewish works on this. And I came across a rabbi out of, I think, Nashville. Can you throw up that quote for me, Chantel? They said this, the rabbis of the past had a method of studying text, a hermeneutic, several in fact. There are and have always been methods, theories of interpretation with regard to Torah. That's the beginning five books of the Bible. Hermeneutics, especially of the Bible and rabbinic texts, is the lens by which we understand Torah. And there are as many ways to understand Torah as there are to understand God. Now, we've been exploring this whole ways of understanding God, right? He's saying there's as many ways to examine Torah as there is to understand God. There are many levels to the text, and there are reasons we approach it with reverence. Okay, that makes a lot of sense to us, right? And what's that last line? And also with a bit of skepticism. What does it look like to approach that story? Men's vows are binding, women's vows are only dependent on men. What is it to look at that story with a bit of reverence, but also a bit of skepticism? Now, folks, I got to be a little honest with you. I have a bias. Most of my education is in a field called hermeneutics. That's that funny H word. It's how you go from text to meaning, but let me explain it this way. I was out in Crowfoot Glades. Does anyone, you know where Lake Louise is? You head up 93 from Lake Louise, head north from there. About half an hour, 45 minutes. On the left, you'll see some big mountains. They're beautiful. One's called Crowfoot Glades. So I have a snowboard that, like a regular snowboard, it's cut in half, and it makes it into skis. And you put skins on the bottom, and you ski to the top of this mountain, and then you ride down on knee-deep to waist-deep powder. It's just heaven. And so we're standing at the top of this mountain, and we're looking for avalanche, signs of avalanche, right? Whenever you're in the backcountry, you hear a lot about these avalanches. I don't want to die, so we're very safe. We just finished all this training on avalanche courses. So we're sitting at the top looking for avalanches. Can you throw the picture up for me? This is where we are. It is beautiful. Now, can you see any signs of avalanches in that picture? In my brain, I'm seeing, okay, there's fun right there, and then there's fun right there, and then there's fun right there, and the whole thing looks fun, right? And I'm looking and looking and looking, and I can't see anything until I do this. Trusty goggles. I put my goggles on. And suddenly I'm like, whoa. Because as I look down here, I'm seeing point release. I'm seeing second point release. I'm seeing a slide that happened almost all the way to the bottom. I'm seeing the section that I just thought was fun. There's avalanches all over the place. That's what a lens does. This lens, I'm sure it half of it's crap, but they tell me that basically it blocks out a whole bunch of light frequencies that my brain kind of jumbles together so it can't see what I need to see, which is these little moments of a little bit of snow hitting the ground and then a whole bunch of snow falling down underneath it. That's the sign of an avalanche. It's a sign of instability. That's a sign of me getting killed. Straight eyes, can't see it. Put this on, it blocks out about half the frequency, and suddenly I'm looking at avalanche after avalanche after avalanche. And it's changing everything. You see, the lens that we look through into things has major impact in what we see. It's not that, you know, the picture, can you throw it back up there? It's not that this is gone. It's not that when I put my goggles on that suddenly all that beauty goes away. It's just that I'm seeing different things. I'm focused in on different things. A friend of mine was telling me about her relationship. You know, we got together and I said, hey, how are things going? And in the past, it's always been, you know, my partner's not doing this, and it's not doing this, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this time something was a little bit different. They said to me, you know what? There's this one area over here that actually, you know, if I'm honest, he's really showing up. And you can tell something inside of her softened a little bit. There's a sense of, he actually does care about me. The deficiencies weren't gone. They're still there. But she was looking through a different lens. That's the power of a lens. And when you take a lens like this in snow and you apply it to different things, you see different things. Relationships, you can see something different. But it's the same thing when we look at the Bible. We look at any text, actually, but specifically the Bible. When we read a text that says, you know, men's vows are binding and women's vows are binding only if men say they're binding, how we look at it, what lens we look at it through can change the text. So let me use it this way. Let's just say a line that you would read in a story someplace. Is she dead? Can you throw it up for me? What if we looked at this through the lens of Grey's Anatomy? Anyone watch Grey's Anatomy? What are, you know, doctor, is she dead? Well, I think I can save her, you know? Ka-dunk, yay! And then probably sex. I don't know. That's how Grey's Anatomy works, right? Isn't that the show? But that's what it means, right? Is she dead? It's like, is she dead, doctor? Okay, now but look at it through the lens of a horror movie. You know, is she dead? I just ran into her with her car. She's trying to kill us this whole movie. Is she dead? Well, we know, of course not. She'll come back and kill you. But nothing's changed. The line didn't change, did it? The lens you look through shifted. What if I said, this is the genre of gender nonconformity, so we're going to throw away the gender binary. Is she dead now means, is the pronoun she no longer appropriate in our culture? Same line, right? We went from preamble to sex to she's going to kill me to having a conversation about gender and whether and how we're going to have a conversation around gender in our culture. All we did is we shifted our lens. When we look at the Bible, there's different lenses we can use to look at it. And like this line, they shift what we see as much as when we do it this way. In current culture right now, Christianity traditionally uses a lens called historical grammatical approach. Does anyone want to remember that line for the rest of the day? That'll be your quiz for next year. What was the thing that current Christianity uses for a criticism? Here's the thing. That lens looks through a very particular thing at the text. It's looking for a single right answer. This is extremely important. Current Christianity right now traditionally uses a lens that says there is one right answer, and most people think they have it, of course. But there's only one right answer, and if your answer is different than mine, we need to split. And if your answer is different than mine and different than his, we need to split. And suddenly you have how many denominations of church in this world? Because of the lens they're looking through. Do you notice that when you grew up, if any of you who, like me, grew up in Christianity, you were never taught that you were looking through a lens, or did you? You're just looking at the Bible. But when you understand the lens you're looking through, suddenly you realize it all shifts. There's a reason why the Catholic Church doesn't have split denominations. The lens they're looking through is, what does the church say about this text? And since the Pope is the church, whatever the Pope says, that's what we all agree on. Easy peasy, right? There's all sorts of lenses. There's original reader lenses. There's transmission of text lenses. There's, I'm trying to think of the words without using really technical words. Reader response is another one. Again, technical words. This is my area of expertise, so I'm going to geek out for a second. There is a ton of ways to look at the text. And here's the most important thing I want you guys to understand. The lens that current Christianity uses, this historical grammatical approach that's looking for one right answer, is relatively new. It's a few hundred years old. And all the commentaries I was trying to read to understand numbers, to understand this story of what's up with the vows and what's going on, it was through that lens. And it was giving me nothing. So the reason I told you Jesus was a Jew, because Jesus didn't even use that lens. In fact, no biblical author had even heard about the current Christian lens. It wasn't even invented yet. So when I went back and said, okay, wait a second, Jesus is a Jew. I think he's a pretty important dude. How would he have read this text? Suddenly everything shifted. The lens I used moved from what's the single right answer to how do I engage with this text? And here's what they wrote. Can you throw the next quote up for me? At Congregation Micah, like many synagogues in the world, we have a hermeneutic, a lens. It's pretty impressive that this guy is aware of his lens. We teach it to everyone and anyone who studies Torah with us, children, adults, Christians, rabbis, scholars, guests, regulars, blah, blah, blah. Our method of study is this: anything that demeans another human being cannot be from God. What does it look like to look at this text through that lens? What does it mean when someone says to you, hey Vince, the Bible's sexist, look, here's the story. And I go, wait a second, I'm going to look at it through this lens. What shifts? Can you throw the next one up for me, Chantel? Rabbi who often teaches Torah at Congregation Micah, he said this, Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes of Israel saying, this is the thing that God has commanded. If a man makes a vow or takes an oath, blah, blah, blah. We know the story. The Torah never says that God says this. Torah says that Moses says that God says this. Moses is using God to excuse his own misogynist bias. Oh. God can be co-opted in here, like a politician. Okay, that was maybe against the politicians. Moses co-opts God. Because in our hearts, we know that demeaning women, young and old, is wrong. Because in our hearts, we know that placing women below men on the hierarchy of Judaism is wrong. And in shifting the authorship of the text from God to Moses, and this is the very important part, when we shift the authorship of the text from God to Moses, Rabbi Shapira reinforces our hermeneutic that anything that degrades other human beings does not come from God. When we're looking at the Bible through the lens of this is what God said, we're in trouble, aren't we? Now, some of you hold that dear and near and dear to your heart. Friend Church, we have space for that. This isn't me saying you can't hold this as literally God's words. What I'm saying is, for me, I can't do that. I can't sit with these stories that I go, this hurts my soul to believe in this. So I'm trying to show you another way. You don't need to hold it. But if you're not comfortable with holding this as literally God's words, there is another option. He calls it the hermeneutic of not degrading any human beings. I call it the hermeneutic of love. When you read that text through the lens of love, you can't see it as God going, women are less than. You can't, can you? In fact, the next text where they go to war and God, again, the characters in the story say God commanded us to kill everybody. Everybody. Except the young women who haven't had babies yet. Yeah, send them to the warriors. We're talking brutal, brutal stuff. If this is God's words, if that's the lens you're looking at this thing through, I don't know how to help. Because then all the critiques of Christianity that we started this thing with, they're true. If you're open to looking at this lens or the story through a different lens, through a lens of love, very quickly you go, wait a second. This isn't God demanding killing. This is human beings doing horribly evil stuff and using God to support it. This is us doing horrible things in our lives and trying to justify it. And suddenly for me, these texts go from a text about a horrible thing that God did to a story about a horrible thing that I could do. To a horrible thing that we can all do. When people ask me now, is there evil in the Bible? Is God an evil person? How would you respond to this stuff? I say, you know what? I don't think those stories are about God. I think this story is about the evil in people's hearts. The evil that's in my heart sometimes. And how we justify the evil in our hearts with religion and God and all sorts of other crap. So today isn't just about reading the Bible differently. This wouldn't be Friends Church if we just left it there. Today, we're going to end with the question, where is the crap in your life? Where is your biases and all the things you're doing that justify you treating people with less than love? Where are they? And how are you justifying them? You can look at your partner and say, yeah, but they did this and this, therefore I get to do this, right? You look at your colleagues or your boss and say, well, yeah, but this is what they're doing, so I'm totally justified in doing this. I'm busy. I have lots to do. That person's stuck on the side of the road. My personal work that's impacting every relationship I have right now, yeah, it's kind of painful, so I don't really think I should have to do that. And just in case you feel like I'm preaching to you today, let me end with a final story. Actually, you know what? Before I do, let me talk about one other thing. Because I always like to end with me screwing up. So we're going to end there. This hermeneutic of love has a really interesting component to it. One that's... let me just jump into it. If we look at look through the lens of love at the Bible, if we look at God through the lens of love, then every one of us are loved by God. If we look at our lives through this lens of love and we see our interaction with something more through the lens of love, then each and every one of us, no matter what we've done, no matter the crap we've done, no matter the stuff we're doing right now, the current stuff that in your mind you're doing right now and going, yeah, but Vince, if you just knew this, God wouldn't love me. Through the lens of love, we're all loved by God. Just sit with that for a second. Let's take a deep breath and just open your heart up to that. This idea of you are loved. That's a pretty profound thing, isn't it? When we talk about how we've supported the bad things we do with other things, the biases, Monday, I'm writing this message. I'm literally at this part of the message, standing at my computer typing away. In 20 minutes, I have a meeting with my insurance adjuster. I've had a pretty major insurance claim. We've been working with the insurance guy. So far, he's been fantastic. Whatever I need, he seems to be able to take care of it. But about 2 weeks earlier, this thing just took a left turn, like... And I've been telling you guys all, right? Oh, no, my insurance guy's awesome, fantastic. People are like, what insurance are you with? I got it, you know? And 2 weeks earlier, this thing just off the rails. It was going to cost me just an obscene amount. It was keeping me up at night. Like, it was just consuming everything. I was just an ass to the people in my life because I'm so... And so I'm writing this message about the hermeneutic of love, typing away, really, how do we do this? And I'm downloading an app on my phone so I can record our conversation for legal purposes. I have a stack of legal documents beside me about this high. And suddenly I had this moment of going, wait a second, Vince. What's the bias here? Just because he's an insurance guy, he's going to screw you? Let's start with he's a human being. Maybe he just made a mistake. So I walked in with my phone set to record, not recording yet, but all ready to go, my stack of papers. I took a deep breath. I was like, buddy, what happened? You know, I'm ready to come in there just guns blazing, like, I was so mad. And he just says, Vince, I owe you an apology. I screwed up. I just want you to know I logged it with my management. And I want to go on record today and say I screwed up and you didn't deserve that. Everything you said is true and we'll make it right. I was the same way. My jaw's on the table. I don't know the future, but I swear to you, if I would have come in guns blazing, we'd be talking through lawyers right now. And I'd be the guy waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, furious, wrecking everything around me because I'm so upset. But I looked at him through that same lens that I'm trying to talk to you guys because I am the worst culprit of this. And the guy came through with such character. I'm so impressed with him. And we finished our meeting going, hey, you got incredible character. Let's keep working in this way that respects each other. You see, the hermeneutic of love isn't just about being loved by God and feeling that. That feels pretty incredible, doesn't it? And the hermeneutic of love just isn't a way to get past these stories that our atheist friends send to us to say Christianity is crap. Although it does both of those things quite well. The hermeneutic of love is what I started this whole message about. It's the thing that when you give to somebody else, they seem to give it back to you. Or you give it to somebody else, and they 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 give it to somebody else, and then it comes back to you, and then you give it to somebody else. And suddenly this world, the quality of the world, just goes up a little bit. Every moment in this world gets elevated into something more. So today I want to leave you with that thought. Not just how do you respond to these horrible stories in the text. What I want to leave you with this is, how are you expressing the hermeneutic of love in every part of your life? Because if you're anything like me, chances are there's a few places it could work. You guys are awesome. Have a great week. Next week, Jeff is back. He's going to talk about what does it mean to be spiritually mature, which is kind of what we started with today. He's going to take it to the next level. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.